You're holding the Zion Amud Aleph, the top line. We said, we talked about in the Mishnah about that you're allowed to trap moles or whatever little creatures those are, and mice that dig tunnels in the fields, so it damages the roots of the trees and of the plants, and they eat them and so forth. So you're allowed to trap them on Chol HaMoed. So we said in the Mishnah, the Tanakhama had said that you're allowed to trap them the normal way on both Chol HaMoed and Shemitah, whether we're talking about a grain field or a tree field. The Chachamim had said in the Mishnah that no, if it's a tree field, then you're allowed to do it normally because they cause a great deal of damage over there. And then in a grain field, then only Shaloi Kadaka. So in the Mishnah, actually, we had it. It was printed over there by Chachamim. I mean, here, the Gemara has a different girsa, and in fact, it mentions it on the side of Rav Amadeus as well. Then a number of Rishonim also have this girsa. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Misdeo Ilan Kadaka, Misdeo Lavan Shaloi Kadaka. That there's a difference between a grain field and a tree field as far as what you're allowed to do to trap moles on Chol HaMoed, whether you're allowed to do it Kadaka or not. So Tanan Abanan, Ketzad Kedarkoi, what is Kedarkoi as far as trapping them? Chofer Guma is the normal way, is you would dig a hole in the ground, Betolabon Betzuda, and then you would hang a trap over there, and then when the moles come through, then they get caught in the trap. Ketzad Shaloi Kedarkoi, what is, how do you do Shaloi Kedarkoi? Is Noyet Shvud, you stick a pole into the ground in a place where the moles are running around. You bang on the stick using a hammer or a mallet or something like that. And you soften the dirt underneath it. Now, what does that accomplish? There's many different explanations among Rishonim what exactly that means. Rashi over here explained that it means the point is you're going to put the pole directly over a place where you know the moles are hiding out, and then you're going to use the pole, you're going to bang it into the ground and push it, crush them underneath it. There's many other explanations. The Rambam seems to say that that part about the pole is just in order to make the hole. So in other words, instead of making the hole in the normal way by digging, you do a shinui by making the hole by putting the pole into the ground and banging on it, so that when you pick up the pole, now you have a ready-made hole, and then you go ahead and put the trap over it. And there's a lot of other explanations, including that the hole that you make over there, now the moles will come out, they'll see that hole, they'll come out of it, and then you'll be able to trap them over there. Whatever the case, the point is that this is a shinui. This is not the normal way of doing it, but you're doing it with some kind of shinui to show that even though it's a malacha that you're able to do during Chol HaMoed, you're doing it with a shinui out of respect for Yom Tov, out of respect for Chol HaMoed. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Tanya, Reb Shimon Elazar Omer, or Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, it says on the side, Kisha Omru B'Sdei Lovan Shaloi Kedarkoi, when the Chachamim said that in a Sdei Lovan, that in a grain field, you have to do it Shaloi Kedarkoi, like we just described, sticking a pole into the ground and banging on it rather than making a hole and putting a trap in it in the usual way. Loi Omru El B'Sdei Lovan Asmucha La'ir. That's only talking about when the grain field is near the city. So therefore, the amount of damage that the moles will do to such a field is not very much. In a grain field itself, okay, they dig tunnels over there. It doesn't damage the plants that badly. But when you have a grain field, which is near a tree field, and the problem is that they're going to go from one to the other, then you would be allowed to do it even kedarkoi. You'd be allowed to do in the normal way where you dig a hole and set a trap over there. Because they may go out of the grain field and start invading the tree field, and then they're going to damage the trees over there because the tunnels and everything that they make underground are much more damaging to the trees. So now Tosfos discusses the question, this Tanya Reb Shimon Elazar Omer, is this a third opinion? So we have the Tanakhama of the Mishnah saying that you can do it however you want with any kind of field. You have Reb Yehuda saying that there's a difference between a tree field and a grain field. And then you have Rav Shimon Elazar saying that there's a difference between a grain field near the city or not. So are there three different opinions? Or is it that maybe Rav Yehuda would agree that maybe Rav Shimon Elazar was only clarifying what Rav Yehuda, what Rav Yehuda is saying? Or another possibility is also that Rav Shimon Elazar is referring to what the Chachamim are saying. The Chachamim are saying you're allowed to do it in a grain field kedarkoi, but maybe that means only when it's near a tree field. So Tosfos brings the different possibilities, and in fact there are different opinions among the Rishonim who the halacha is like. The Rambam paskins and in Shulchan Aruch paskins like Rav Shimon Elazar. Like the combination, rather, of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon Elazar. So ordinarily in a grain field, they have to do it with a shinui, but if the grain field is near the tree field, then you don't have to do it with a shinui. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Makodinus appears of a moyed. We said another thing is if you have a hole in your fence around your field or garden or what have you, then you're allowed to Makodin, which means that you're not allowed to fix it in the regular way, but you're allowed to like make a temporary thing to block it. So Kate said Makarin. So what does that mean, Makarin? Rabbi Yosef Amar Bahutza Vadafna. So Rabbi Yosef says it means, for example, that you can make a temporary fence out of Hutza Vadafna. Hutza is lulav leaves, Daphna is laurel leaves or laurel branches. So Rashi explains the way they used to do it was they'd make the fence itself out of Daphna, out of laurel branches, and then they'd weave it together using it to make it hold together using lulav leaves. So that it's a common kind of thing you find in a number of places in Shas when we talk about a temporary fence like that. That was their method of making a temporary fence. So here you're allowed to do that. The Masnisa Tana, in a Braisa, we learn another possibility. Sur b'tzur, you put stones in the breach over there. They're in a toch batit, but you don't smear them. You don't smear them with clay, with mortar, as you usually would, to hold them together. So you just have the bricks there, and then after Chol HaMoed, you put the mortar and make it into a strong wall like it's supposed to be. Okay, Amar of Chista, lo shanu ela koisel hagina. Now, Rav Chista says this that we're talking about, that you have to do it in an unusual way. You have to use this chutz of a daphna, or you have to use stones without mortar between them, is only when we're talking about a fence around a garden. So now if people go in there, there's not much to be harmed. And the point is, we're showing him also say, a garden is not usually near Rosh Hashanah. A garden is usually behind your house, and not many people are going to be going in there anyway, even if there's a hole in the fence. Aval, koisel, a chotzer, but when you come to the wall of a chotzer, where there's much more possible hefset over there, because you always have, people keep various kinds of things in their chotzer, like in the same vein as people nowadays keep things in their front yard or in their driveway or things. And also it's next to Rosh Hashanah, so there's a much greater chance that people are going to go in there, that Ganovim are going to go in there, and they may even then break into the houses. So when you have a breach and a wall of a chotzer, Bona Kedarka, then Rav Chista says you're allowed to build it normally, even on Chol HaMoed, because of the hefsid, because of the potential hefsid involved. So the Gemara says, Lema Messiah, well, can we say that the following Braisa supports what Rav Chista says? The Braisa says, "Koisel hagoicha lo shusarabim." If there's a wall that is leaning over into the shusarabim, so you have the wall has been standing there a long time. Over time, the wall has weakened, and now it's starting to buckle, and it's starting to bend over to the shusarabim. So there's a problem. So at any time, it might collapse, and somebody who walks by there is going to get hurt. So said a bona kedarka, then you're allowed to tear it down on Chol HaMoed, and you're allowed to build it normally mipnei hasakana, because of the danger. So we see another that it shouldn't fall on people in Rosh Hashanah. So we see, in other words, that there's a case where you're allowed to build a wall normally. So that would be a proof for what Rav Chista is saying. On the other hand, the Gemara says no. Hosam katani taima mipnei hasakana. No, because you can see the Braisa is saying that there you only have an exception because of the danger, because it might fall on somebody in Rosh Hashanah. That doesn't show that other than that you would be allowed to build in a case where there's no such sakana. Now, the obvious question is, in that case, what was the Gemara thinking? It says right there in the Braisa, mipnei hasakana. So the Ritva, explains, when you think about it, tearing down the wall obviously is necessary mipnei sakana, but to rebuild it is not part of mipnei sakana. There's no danger to the bnei rishus harabim if you don't rebuild it, and yet the braisa is saying you're allowed to. So evidently that shows that it's not only sakana that allows it. You see, therefore, that you have other circumstances where you're allowed to build it as well. In this case, in other words, if we don't allow him to, then the person is going to say, well, you know what, I don't want to tear it down because then I don't want to leave my chotzer exposed, the whole chalamoyed. So the fact that we allow him to build it, the fact that we allow him to build it after he had to tear it down with Nasakana, maybe we thought would be a proof for what Rav Chista is saying, but we're saying no, only because there's Mipnei Sakana are we allowing him the whole thing, because if we don't allow him to rebuild it, he's not going to want to tear it down in the first place. That doesn't necessarily prove that you should be allowed to do it where there's no such circumstance in the first place. The Ikadami, others say that the discussion went the other way around. That Toshma, the Gemara tries to bring that Braisa just the opposite in the second version, not as a proof for Rav Chista, but rather as a question on him. The Braisa says, if a wall is leaning over into Rosh Hashanah, so you're allowed to tear it down and build it normally on Chalamoyed, but Mipnei Sakana, because of the danger, implying Mipnei Sakana Ein, Shaloi Mipnei Sakana Loi. So you're only allowed to because of the danger, implying if there's no danger, then you're not allowed to tear it down and you're not allowed to rebuild it. So in that case, just the opposite. That would be a contradiction on Rav Chista. Rav Chista is saying that anytime you have a chotzer, a wall of a chotzer that collapsed, then because it's next to Rosh Hashanah and there's hefset involved, you're allowed to rebuild it. But now we're saying, look at the Braisa, seems to be saying that you're only allowed to build such walls only when there's sakana involved. And the answer is, Amalach Rav Chista, the answer is, Rav Chista can tell you that Braisa is not a contradiction to me, because Hosam Soser Boina, because there we're saying the Braisa is allowing you to do everything. Because there's a sakana, you're allowed to tear it down, and you're allowed to build it. Hocha Boina Veloy Soser. Here we're talking about in a case where it wasn't leaning in the first place, there was just a breach in the wall. Then Rav Chista will say you're allowed to build it, but you're not allowed to tear it down first. Now you might have wanted to, for example, you might want to tear it down in order to build the whole wall from scratch so that you have a nice, neat looking wall. But we're saying you're not allowed to do that. The only thing you're allowed to do is rebuild it, is build in the breached area over there. Okay, you can build it normally, you can use bricks and mortar, but you still can't tear down more in order to make it nice and neat. Whereas when there's sakana, then you're allowed to even tear it down. So the Braisa says not a contradiction to Rav Chista. So the question is why? Hasam nami v'stir v'lo livni. In that, if the Braisa is only allowing it because of sakana, then you should only be allowed to tear down the dangerous wall. You shouldn't be allowed to rebuild it. And the answer is that can't be, because imken mimna v'lo soser, then the person is not going to want to tear it down in the first place, and the sakana is still going to continue. So in order to give him an incentive to tear it down and remove the potential danger to Bnei Rosh Hashanah, will allow him even to build it afterwards. But were it not for that, then for example, with a gina, there's not such a problem. Again, a gina, even if the wall over it is leaning over, if he leaves it not completely fenced in over Chalamoyed, he leaves it, he only puts in, as we said, a temporary fence, then it's not so bad. Not many people go by there anyway. There's less of a problem that they're going to break in and steal anything. And if they do, there's not much in there to steal anyway. And it's not next to Rosh Hashanah. But in this case, where it's next to Rosh Hashanah, and we want him to tear it down because otherwise it's a danger to them, then we'll even allow him to rebuild it. But otherwise, we wouldn't have allowed him to rebuild it. But still, the Braisa that says Mipnei Sakana is just explaining why the Mipnei Sakana is not explaining why you're allowed to build. In fact, anyway, a Koso Chotzer you'd be allowed to rebuild. The focus is the fact that you're allowed to tear it down is Mipnei Sakana, and then the fact that you're allowed to rebuild it is, which you wouldn't have normally been able to do, Chalamoyed, you wouldn't be able to tear it down and rebuild it, is again with Nasakana, because otherwise the person's not going to want to tear it down in the first place. So the Braisa is not contradicting Rav Chista. And the Gemara says, Omer Rav Ashi must nisin nami deka. In fact, Rav Ashi says, you can see that if you look carefully at the words of our Mishnah. where the Mishnah continues that when you have a breach and offense like that, so we said Chol HaMoed, you're only allowed to make a temporary repair, chutz of a dafna, or bricks without mortar, like we said before. But then the Mishnah had said, Rashvias Boina Kadarka. During Shemitah, the Mishnah had said, you're allowed to build it in the normal way. So we have to ask, Dehecha, where is this fence? Where is this wall that partially collapsed that you're saying that you're allowed, that where there's a breach in it, where you're saying that on Shemitah you're allowed to build it normally? E lema de chotzer. Are you talking about a wall of a chotzer? Of course you're allowed to. Tzricha lemeimer. Is it necessary to say? Why would there be anything about the dinim of Shemitah that would prevent you from fixing the wall of your chotzer? A Shemitah, you're not allowed to do agricultural work. You're allowed to do regular construction work. This is regular construction work. So of course you're allowed to. El alav de gina. So it must be that the Mishnah is talking about the wall around a garden. And in other words, it's saying, so Chol HaMoed, you have to do it differently than normal. But Shvius, even though, and the point is, but Afagav de Mechsi commander of the Tirusel Peri, even though it looks like by doing that, he's doing that in order to protect the fruit and the whatever's growing the crops in his garden. And during Shemitah, those are supposed to be hefker. So you're going to say, what is he doing putting up a fence over there to keep people out? Nevertheless, he's allowed to, because it's more than just, it's not so much keeping people out, it's keeping animals out and whatever. So therefore, the Mishnah is telling us that when it comes to a ginna, you'll, even though you have that potential problem, but unlike Chol HaMoed, there's no reason to have to do a shinui. So therefore you're allowed. And therefore, so we see that the Mishnah is talking about the wall around a garden, and it's saying that on Chol HaMoed, you would have to do it with a shinui, implying that if it's a wall around a chotzer, you don't have to do it with a shinui regardless. Shma Mina, so that proves Rav Chista's point, that there's a difference in that regard. The wall of a chotzer, again, because of the hefset involved, because people may now go into the chotzer through the breach and steal things, then you're allowed to fix it on Chol HaMoed. That is the halacha. However, Tosfos points out that would only apply to the wall between the chotzer and the shoset abin. Now, you can have between one chotzer and another, you also have a wall. What if that wall falls over? That you're not allowed to fix during Chol HaMoed, Tosfos says, because then you don't have Bnei Rosh Hashanabim, then you only have the people of the other chotzer can go in through that hole, through that collapsed area of wall that we're not so worried about. There's not that much hefset over there that you should be able to fix that wall. So therefore, that you can't do on Chol HaMoed, leave it for afterwards. The Mishnah says, So now this Mishnah and the Gemara about it, we'll start this Gemara today and finish the Sugya tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, is going to be talking about Dinim of Tzaras. We have to review beforehand a number of basic concepts in Dinim about Tzaras in order to understand what's going on in the Sugya. First of all, a Mitzora, we know, goes through many different stages. You have before, when the person gets a spot on his skin or any of the various other physical signs that can be tzaras, there's different ones on regular skin versus on hairy, versus on the hair or beard, etc. Anyway, the point is, until the person has to go to the kohen, and the kohen is going to tell him he's tamei or tahor, until he does that, he's tahor. A person could have a spot of tzaras on his skin, and until he gets, until the kohen tells him, you're tamei or you're tahor, nothing happens. He's perfectly allowed to be among people, etc. I guess maybe you could compare it to the fact that a person may not have corona until he actually gets tested for it. But whatever, anyway. So that's stage one, is before the person goes to the kohen. The person goes to the kohen. Now there can be cases where right away we have signs in there that show that it's definite tzaras. For example, if in the white spot there are two or more hairs that turn white because of it. So then he goes straight to being what's called a muchlat, a confirmed mitzora, where then he's a mitzora until it heals. Then you can have, though, the more usual cases when he comes to the kohen, it's not definitive yet. He has the white spot, and it's at least the minimum size, but it doesn't have two white hairs and it doesn't have any of the other signs that make a definite tzaras. So then the kohen v'hisgiroi, the kohen locks him up for a week. There's different understandings among the Rishonim what hester means. Does it mean that he's actually locked up in a house? Does it mean the Rosh brings a possibility? Maybe it just means the Kohen draws a mark around his around the Tzaras spot so that afterwards he'll be able to see if it grew. Anyway, whatever the case, that lasts for a week. After a week, on the seventh day, the Kohen checks him again and sees what the story. If the Tzaras spot has gotten bigger, or it's developed two white hairs, or it's developed a patch of healthy-looking skin in the middle, then he's a Muchlar. Then he's a confirmed Mitzvah. If not, then he locks him up for another week. At the end of that second week, so on the 13th day now, you're talking about, because the seventh day counts as the first day of the second seven, as the first of the second set of 7 days. So on the 13th day, the Kohen checks him again. The Tzaras has grown bigger or developed any of those other signs, then he's Muchlar. If the Tzaras has gone away, then that's it, the guy is Tahor. If the Tzaras is the same size, now Rashi on Chumash, and it seems that Rashi agrees with, it seems that Rashi said learns our sugya the same way, that in fact he's still going to have to be in quarantine until the Tzaras disappears or turns a duller shade of white. Most of the other Rishonim learn that at that point, even though it hasn't grown, even though it hasn't changed in size, and most of the other Rishonim hold that even though nothing further has happened, he's still Tahor. The maximum he can ever be quarantined is 2 weeks. Now, suppose that the guy becomes a Muchlat. So again, so you have Musgo is going to be, he's going to quarantine for 1 week or 2 weeks. And at the end of each week, the Kohen checks him. The Muchlat is remaining in Muchlat status indefinitely until the Tzaras gets healed. Once he gets healed, then you have, the first thing is, you have the ceremony that it describes at the beginning of Parashas Metzorah with the two birds and the Eitz Erez and Ezov and water and so forth. After that, the Metzorah has to count 7 clean days. Those are called Yemei Sfira. So far we have this Hesker, the time when he's quarantined, Hechlet, or Muchlat, which is the time when he's a confirmed Metzorah. You have the 7 clean days that he's counting. And then after those 7 clean days, then he brings his korbanos. Now, there's a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos that affects the entire understanding of the sugya over here. What are the dinim that apply to him during the time of Hesker versus the time of Hechlet? Now, we're going to learn on Omud Beis that during the stage of Yemei Sfira, he's also to have relations with his wife. Now, what happens during the two previous stages? During the stage of Hechlet, we're going to have a machloikas on Omud Beis, whether he's allowed to have relations during that time, during the time of Hechlet. So during the time when he's outside the city, is he allowed to have relations with his wife or not? We're going to have a machloikas tanoim on that subject. As far as Yemei Hesker, as far as the time when he's quarantined, this is the first machloikas, Rashi and Tosfos, is he allowed to or not? Tosfos holds that no. Rashi holds that no. Tosfos argues with that and says that yes, he is. So according to Rashi, the stages are during Hesker, he's not allowed. During Hechlet, he is allowed. Well, during Hechlet, you have a machlokas tanoim, whether he's allowed. The halacha is that he is. And during Sfira, during the 7 days of Sfira, then he's not allowed to again. Whereas according to Tosfos, he was allowed the whole time. The only time he becomes also to, well, of course, so during Hesker, he's allowed to. During Hechlet, you're going to have the machlokas. And during Sfira, he won't be allowed to. That's the first machlokas. A second machlokas is between Rashi and Tosfos is, does, when the person is in quarantine, does he have to be outside the three machnas? We know that when he's a muchlat, he has to be. He has to go outside the walled cities of Eretz Yisrael. We know that when he's during the 7 days of Sfira, he does not have to. What about during the days of Hesker? Does he have to be outside the machna, or does he have to be outside the three machnas or not? Rashi over here says that he does not have to. Tosfos learns that he does. Those are a couple of things, you also have later on, as we'll discuss something in the sugya, there's a further machlokas between them about what he gains and loses during different stages of the whole tzaras process. So with all of that, let's get into the Mishnah and the Gemara, and then as we go through the sugya, we'll explain the various places how Rashi and Tosfos are going to explain various aspects of it. So the Mishnah says, "Reb Meir Omer, Royin Asenegoyim B'tchila LaHokel Avloy LaHachna." You're allowed to, a Koyin is allowed on Chalamayid to look at Negoyim to be Mekel, but not to be Machner. Now the word B'tchila means at the beginning. But on the face of it, at the beginning, when you're first checking him for tzaras, there's nothing to be makel on. There's only the possibility of chumrah. You're either going to tell him that he's tameh or he's not losing anything because he was tahor before and he's tahor now. So therefore, a lot of the rishonim take out the word batchila. On the other hand, the Tosfos Yom Tov says, poet of the machlokas, Rashi and Tosfos, that we'll discuss in the Gemara is whether in fact Rav Meir is allowing the Kohen to see him the first time. So maybe in that case, the word batchila would belong over there. Anyway, so the mayor says you're allowed to see Negoyim on Chalamoyed where there can be a Kula, but not, in other words, to say that the guy is Tahar, but not L'chumra, not the Kohen can't declare during Chalamoyed that he's Tomei, that he's Tomei Muhammad. Because if he does, then he's going to be causing the guy Tsar during Yom Tov, the Samachta B'chagecha. So therefore, you can't create Tsar for him during Yom Tov. As the Rambam phrases it, you're going to make his Yom Tov into a time of Avelos because you're telling him he has Tsaras. The Chacham say neither one. You can't tell it, you can't check him, Lahokel or Lahachmer, for reasons that we're going to discuss in the Gemara. The Chachamim over here, primarily we're going to talk about Rabbi Yossi in the Gemara. So they say that Kohen can't check for Tsaras during Chalamoyed at all, not even to be Makel. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Rav Meir, Royanes and Goyim, Lahokol, Lahachmer. So in a Braisa, Rav Meir says, again, like he said in the Mishnah, you're allowed to look at them Lahokol because you might, to be Makel, you're allowed to check them where there's a chance that you're going to say that it's Tahar. Avaloy Lahachmer, but not Lahachmer. Rav Yossi, Meloy Lahokol, Veloy Lahachmer. Why is Rav Yossi saying you can't? He says, because you don't have that kind of choice. If you see, if the Kohen checks the guy and he sees that the tzaras has spread, then there's no choice. He's going to have to tell him he's Tomei. So what are you telling me, the mayor? So what do you mean? If it's lahachmer, if you would have to tell him he's a mitzvah, you're going to not be able to tell him anything at all. You can't do that. You have to tell him one thing or the other. So therefore, since there's a possibility that it may end up l'chumra and ruin is Yom Tov, then you can't do that. Omar Rebbe, so now Rebbe says, Nirin divir Rav Meir b'muster v'divir Rav Yossi b'muchor. It seems more logical to accept Rav Meir's position when it comes to a musker, when it comes to the person who's in quarantine for those 7 days or 13 days, that the Kohen can check him on the 7th day or on the 13th day, even though it's during Chalamoy, it says Rebbe. The Divir of Yossi B'Mukhlat, it seems more logical to accept Rav Yossi's position by a Mitzorah Mukhlat, where he's already been confirmed as a Mitzorah. And now he's waiting until the Tzaras goes away. So let's analyze this. Amar Rava, the Tahar Kula Amalei Pligi Delei Chazulei. When the guy is Tahar, then there's no question that you don't see him. The Kohen shouldn't see him because there's only a possible downside. Up until now, he's Tahar. Again, he can be walking around indefinitely with Tzaras spots on his skin, and nothing happens until the Kohen says Tamei or Tahar. So therefore, so Rava is saying, everybody would agree that when the guy is Tahar, then there's nothing, the Kohen should not be looking at him because there's only a possible downside. There's only the possibility of ruining his Yom Tov. There's no possibility of benefiting. The Hesker Rishon, now when it comes to the first quarantine, the first 7 days, Dekula Amalei Pligi Dechazilei, then everybody would agree that the Kohen can see the Tzaras. Now, here's one of the places where Rashi and Tosfos argue in the meaning of the sugya. Rashi explains that why can he see him after the Hesker Rishon? Because there's nothing to lose. If the guy's already in quarantine, so if the Kohen says you still have to be quarantined for another week, fine, he hasn't lost anything. He was in quarantine before, he's still in quarantine now. On the other hand, if the tzaras has gone away or light or become duller in color or whatever, then the Kohen can tell him he's Tahar and good, he's free to go. So therefore, there's no downside of it. Now, here's where Tosfos says, what are you talking about? There's a third possibility. The tzaras could have gotten bigger, or any of the other simonim that make it definitive tzaras could have developed. And then, so there's a third possibility. He could be sent home, he could be locked up for another week, or he could be told he's a Mitzvah Mukhla. How can you say, says Tosfos, that at the end of the first week, there's no downside, and therefore that everybody should agree that you can see him? Tosfos explains that No, Hesker Rishon means the beginning of Hesker Rishon. So in other words, when it comes the first time, it's when it comes the first time, then we're saying that you're allowed to check him, because then at that point, at the end, when you're first quarantining him, there's no possibility of making him of making him definitively tameh. Unless there are signs of definite saras over there, fine, then you won't see him. But in the ordinary case, where all you have is a white spot and nothing else, then all you're going to be doing is quarantining him. So that's not so bad. On the other hand, when it comes to, as the Gemara is going to say, Hesker Sheni, then you have the Machlokes, at the beginning of the second week, what's going to happen? Because then you have the possibility that it might spread and you're going to declare him definitively Tomei, and that's what Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi are going to be arguing on. So that's how Tosfos learns. Different Mephoshim talk about, different Rishonim and Achronim talk about to explain Rashi's view and then defend him against Tosfos, is the idea that the possibility that he's going to develop simonim of definitive tzaras, that it's going to grow or develop two white hairs and so forth, is not really very common. Most of the time, it's just going to stay as is, and therefore the likelihood is that at the end of the first week he's still just going to be closed up for another week, and therefore there's no harm in that because he's already closed up, he's already locked up before that anyway. Okay, so far we're saying, and the Hagos Agro actually changes the Girsa around and says that by Hesker Sheni, everybody would agree you could see him, but by Hesker Rishon not, and different Achronim talk about, is that right? Is there maybe a mistake in the way we have the Hagos Agro in front of us? Anyway, so there's a certain case where the Meir and Rabbi Yossi agree. So there's cases, so far, Rava says, where definitely you're not going to see him because there's only downside, there's no upside to it. There's cases where you're definitely going to see him because there's not much downside. So let's, according to Rashi, that would be at the end of the first week. The major possibilities are that he's going to be quarantined for another week, and fine, he's already in quarantine anyway, it doesn't hurt him that much, or that he's going to be left to go free. It's very unlikely that at the end of that first week, it's going to be definitive tzaras. And according to Tosfos, we're talking about the beginning of the first week. So then they're allowed to see him. Ki pligi behesk yoshen. The machlokas is when it comes to the second quarantine, where at the end of it, either he's going to be determined, either at the end of it, there's the possibility that he might be determined to be a mitzora muchlot. Namely, if it grows or develops two white hairs, or again, we said before that according to Rashi on the Pasuk, and it seems Rashi learns this way in the Gemara here as well, even at the end of the second week, not necessarily if the spot just stays as is, then we're also going to declare him a mitzvah mochot, unlike at the end of the first week, we would just close him up for a second week. So now comes the machlokas, Reb Meir and Reb Yossi. Mar sova b'koyin talya milsa. Reb Meir figures, look, after all, the determination of whether it's saras or not depends on the koyin. E tahor omalei tahor. So if he's tahor, then he'll be able to tell him tahor and good. Now the guy can celebrate his Yom Tov and his Chol HaMoed properly, because now he's not in quarantine anymore. The itame, and if the Kohen, if the situation is that the Kohen would have to tell him tame, says Reb Meir, shosik, then the Kohen won't say anything and will defer things until after Yom Tov. So therefore, so Reb Meir is saying there's no downside that we might have to declare him tame muchot, and then all of the consequences that come from that, because the Kohen has the option to just not say anything in that case. Omar Sabar, whereas Reb Yossi holds, that doesn't work because Lataray or Latamayksi. The Pasuk says that the Kohen has to be Matar him or be Matame him, meaning, in other words, the Kohen doesn't have the option to not say anything. If it's Tohar, he has to say Tohar. If it's Tame, he has to say Tame. There's no possibility of just being quiet. Okay. So that would be the Machlokes. Okay. So now let's analyze further. Omar. So now we said before in the Braisa that Omar Rebbe, we said that Rebbe had said Nirin Divir of Yosi b'Muchot, the Divir of Meir b'Musker, that Rebbe accepts Rabbi Yossi's opinion when it comes to the Muchlat, where that, in other words, that if he was already confirmed with Saras, then the Kohen is not allowed to see him during Chol HaMoed. The Divir of Yossi b'Musker, and on the other hand, I accept what Rabbi Meir is saying by a Musker, namely that the Kohen can see him, and if it's going to be that he's Tomei, then just not say anything. The Gemara says, "Well, Tanya Ipcha, don't we have a Braisa that says the other way, a different Braisa that says the other way around, that Rebbe says, I agree with Reb Meir by a Mukhla and with Reb Yossi by a Muster." And the answer is, Tanoi hi alibi de Rebbe. The answer is, as Machlokes Tanoim, what Rebbe himself held. Because we have another factor to consider. Mar Sabat Savta, the Alma Odif lay, Umar Sabat Savta, the Ishtar Adif lay. Because we have to consider the following. Like we said before, there are stages during the time, during the whole life cycle of a Metzora, there are stages where he doesn't, where he loses or gains Savta da Alma. Now here's where you have another machlokes, what that means. Savta da Alma literally means the companionship of the world. So Rashi understands that what it means is, listen, the Metzora Muchot is going, the Metzora Muchot has to be sent outside of the three machnas. The Metzora Musker does not. So therefore, in other words, what happens when a person goes from being Musker to Muchlat, then he's losing out. Now, he's losing Savsa de Alma. He's losing the fact that now he doesn't have the companionship of other people because now he has to go outside the city. On the other hand, Rashi learns that at that point, he's gaining Savsa de Ishtar. He's gaining companionship with his wife because Rashi learns, again, we're going to have now a Machlokas Tanoim, whether a Metzora Muchlat is mutter to have relations with his wife. We're going to say that there's an opinion that says yes. According to that opinion, Rashi says, though, he was also to during the time of Musker. He becomes mutter to during the time of Muchlat. So therefore, so in other words, so now he may be losing Savta D'Alma because now he's having to be sent outside the city. On the other hand, he's gaining Savta de Ishtar because now his wife is able to join him and he's able to have relations with her, according to that opinion. So therefore, he has what to lose, but he also has what to gain. So now, therefore, so the machlokes would be, what would the person prefer? Would he prefer to be able to continue having Savta de Alma? Well, then in that case, we don't want to declare him a muchlat because then he's going to have to be sent outside the city and he's going to lose that Savta de Alma. On the other hand, on the other hand, the other opinion within Rebbe holds that the person is better off that way because now he's able to have relations with his wife again, which he wasn't able to as a musker, and therefore, it's not so bad if the Kohen ends up declaring him a muchlat because then at least he's able to be with his wife again. That's how Rashi learns. Now, here's where also, again, Rashi is basing himself on several assumptions. One of them being that the Musker is not allowed to have relations with his wife, and another one being that the Musker does not have to be sent outside the city. Like we said before, Tosfos questions both of those and says it seems based on other sources that that's not necessarily so. So rather, Tosfos has a different explanation of Savta D'Alma means, when you think about it, we know that a Metzora has to tear his clothes and let his hair grow long. And those are only when he's muchlat. We learned in previous Masechta that we learned was Megillah. We said there was a Mishnah there that said, Ein bein mitzoda musker la mitzoda muchlat, ela prio prima. There's no difference between a musker and a muchlat, except that the muchlat has to let his hair grow long and tear his clothes, and the musker does not, which is actually one of Tosfos's proofs against Rashi. So what are you telling me, Rashi, that during the time of Hesker, he's not allowed to have relations? That doesn't fit with what the Mishnah is saying over there. So Tosfos learns that the Savta D'Alma refers to this fact that now he's going to have to tear his clothes and grow his hair long, which therefore automatically people are going to stay away from him because of that. So one Tana would hold within Rebbe's opinion that he'd rather have Savta D'Alma, he'd rather remain a Muster and he doesn't have to tear his clothes and so forth. And the other one says, after all, Savta de Ishtay Adifalay, meaning, in other words, he doesn't care about losing Savta Dalma. At least he has still his wife with him. He only cares about Savta de Ishtay. And then there's the point also that after all, when he's a Musker, he has hope. At the end of this week, I may be tar. When he's a muchlat, then he doesn't have that hope because then it can be indefinite. He's going to be maybe mitzoda for a long time, and therefore, so you have the machlokas. Different Rishonim talk about the ritva, and others talk about that. The part of it may be actually that
Rebbe himself is uncertain which of those factors is the more important one, Tzavta d'Ishtoi or Tzavta d'Alma, and therefore you have different opinions which one in fact is the more critical one. In any case, the point is also once he's finished with the tzaras, once the tzaras heals and the kohen does the thing with the two birds and all that, then afterwards when he begins his yimei sfira, then definitely he's not allowed to have relations with his wife. So that would also be a factor to consider. So that's why we said if he's a mitzvah mochlat, we have an opinion within Rebbe that says that he agrees with Rabbi Yossi that you shouldn't be checking him. Why? Because even though there's an upside to it, namely that he's going to be able to come back into the city and he's on his way to becoming tahor. On the other hand, then he loses the ability to be with his wife, because then during those yemei sfira he's also to be with her. And that opinion would say that he would prefer tzavta d'ishtoi. So he'd prefer being a mitzvah mochot for a few more days and having to stay outside the city rather than having to lose his companionship with his wife for a week. Whereas again, if we say that, so now we're going to have in the Gemara a machlokas whether a mitzvah mochot is also osur, but Tashmish Amita. If we say that he was, then he's anyway, then there's nothing to lose by the Kohen checking him and telling him he's Tahor, because now he'll begin his Yimei Sfira. Fine, during the Yimei Sfira, he won't be able to have relations. He wasn't, according to that opinion, which we're going to quote now, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says that he's not allowed to have relations during the time of when he was Mukhlat anyway. So in that case, there's no downside to the Kohen coming and checking him during Chalamoyed and declaring him Tahor. So the Gemara says, "Remember the mochlat mutar b'tashmish amita." So you're telling me again, the premise of what we just said is that the mitzvah mochlat is allowed tashmish amita. So only once he leaves that stage and goes to the next stage of yemei sfira is he going to be osur. And that's why we're saying there's a potential downside to checking him during chol hamoed, because he's a mochlat now. He was outside the city. He had his hair growing long and his clothes torn, etc. But now, on the other hand, there is a downside, because until now he was able to be with his wife, and now for the next week he's not. Where do you get that from? So Gemara says, "Ain." As a matter of fact, yes. V'ha Tanya, and indeed, we learn in a Braisa. When the Pasuk says that during his 7 days that he's counting, it says, V'yoshav michut v'ohalo shivas yamim, it says he should sit outside his tent for 7 days. That means she also tashmish amita. That means during those 7 days, he's also to have relations with his wife. How do we know that? The ain olay ala ishtoi. The word olay in that pasuk means that he's not allowed to be with his wife. Shenema leich emor lahem shuvu lachem la'olaychem. As we find after Matan Torah, before Matan Torah, Hashem had told in this week's parasha, Hashem had told the Jewish people, "Hey, you nechonim b'shloshes yamim al tigshul isha. You're not allowed to between now and Matan Torah have relations with your spouses." After Matan Torah, Hashem tells them, "Leich emor lahem shuvu lachem la'olaychem. Go tell them you can return to your tents," meaning that you're allowed to resume normal family life. So we see that oihel means the person's wife. So therefore, when it says by the mitzvah that he has to stay, michut ma'oloi means that he's off limit, that his wife is off limit to him for a week. Rabbi Yehuda says, focuses on a pasuk that says that when it says they should count for him 7 days. Now that pasuk actually is a pasuk from Yechezkel. Tosfos points out that later on in the third parak of Or Masechta on Daf Tesvav, we're going to have a whole sugya over there, which is going to talk about a number of dinim of mitzvah. There, the Gemara is going to bring that pasuk and douse it. It seems, therefore, that Matikim, that copyists, mistakenly inserted that pasuk in Or Gemara over here. Really, Rabbi Yehuda is learning from the same words that we just said, "V'yashav michut ba'olei shivas yamim." So Rabbi Yehuda is focusing. Since it says that only shivas yamim, then it means yimei sfira v'lo yimei chaluta. It means only during the time of counting, only during those 7 days, is he also to have relations with his wife. But before that, when he was a cholot, when he was a mukhlat, he was allowed to. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with his father, and he says, no, zayin yimei sfira kavachomer yimei chaluta. No. That he's also to actually that when we say over here Rabbi Yehuda Omer, there's a different girsa that's Rebbe Omer, that Hagois Mahari Lando, which is Hagois from the Noda Yehuda at the bottom of the Amud, says it's really supposed to be Rebbe Omer. So Rebbe is the one who says that only doing Yemei Sfira is the also. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Zayin Yemei Sfira, Kavachomer Limei Chalutai. during the 7 days of counting, he's not allowed to have relations with his wife. How much more so during the days before that, during the days of Chalutah, where, after all, he's on a higher level of tuma, he's metame even anything in a room that he walks into, etc. So therefore, Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda says, if the pasuk is telling us he's also to have relations during the 7 days of Sfira, how much more so during the time before that when he's mochlat? So now again, that machlokas is going to affect what we said before. If we say that while he's a mochlat, he's allowed to have relations, and only during Yimei Sfira is he not, well, then there's a possible downside to him going into Yimei Sfira, doing Chol HaMoed, and therefore maybe we should say that not. On the other hand, we would say maybe we would, because even though he loses that, he gains Tzav Sadalma. He gains that he's able to be around other people. He doesn't have to tear his clothes and then grow his hair long anymore, etc. On the other hand, if we say that he was anyway also, if we say that anyway he was also to have relations with his wife during Yimei Chalutai, then there's no possible downside to checking him and telling him that he's Tahar, because to be also to his wife, he's also to his wife anyway while he's a Chalut. So that would be the machlokas that affects. The previous one about whether the Kohen can check him during Chol HaMoed. So the Gemara continues, the Braisa continues. V'amar Abchia, Danti Lifnei Rebbe. I discussed this point in front of Rebbe. I said, "Limatonu Rabbeinu, didn't you teach us, Rebbe, Yosem lehoyoloi leuziyahu elabi mechalutai?" Yosem, who was one of the kings of Yehuda, was conceived by Uziyahu during the time of Uziyahu's chalutai. What happened? You have the whole story over there in Divrei Hayomim, where Uziyahu, the king of Yehuda, went into the Heichal one day to bring Torahs, and the Kohanim are telling him, "You're not allowed to. You're a Zor." Anyway, Akitsu, he got Saras. And he had to leave. And for the rest of his life, he had tzaras. Now, the psukim over there don't say explicitly in so many words what year it was of his reign that he got tzaras. But there's a pasuk over there that says that in the 27th year of King Yerovam of Yisrael, then the Uziyahu became king of Yehuda. And we understand it can't literally mean that he became king, because Tosfos and Rashi Ksav Yad and different other Rishonim explain the details that it's impossible to say that based on other Pesukim. What it means is that in that year, the 27th year of Yerovam, is when Uziyahu got Saras. So now, what is that in terms of the years of Uziyahu? So Rashi Ksav Yad and then the Ritva and others talk about, based on certain other Pesukim, that it seems that it was the 24th year of Uziyahu's reign. So Yerovam had become king 3 years before Uziyahu. So now the 27th of Yerovam equals the 24th of Uziyahu. Uziyahu ended up ruling 52 years, because even after he got Saras, he's still king. He just couldn't be in Yerushalayim. Eventually, the pasuk says he died, and Yosem, his son, took over as king. And Yosem was 25 at the time. Now, if Yosem is 25 and Uziyahu had Taras for 28 years, because from 24 to 52 is 28 years, then it follows that Yosem was conceived after Uziyahu had Taras. So you see that you're allowed to have relations when you were Mochlat, because that's what Uziyahu did. Tosfos makes the calculation a little differently. Tosfos explains that the 3 years there that we're talking about actually refer to something else, that Yerovam had become king for 3 years while his father was alive, but then he became sole king afterwards, and his years of his reign count from then. So therefore, Tosfos learns that the 27th year of Uziyahu is equal to the 27th year of Yerovam, and that's the year when Uziyahu got Saras. So fine, from then until 52 is 25 years. So now you have the machloikas. It's going to be very simple. Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda is going to say, okay, so Yosem was conceived at the beginning of Uziyahu's 27th year, and the story that how he got Saras happened later in the year, so that doesn't prove anything. Whereas the Chachamim are going to say that it seems that Yosem was conceived after Uziyahu became a Metzora. I guess you would have to factor into the fact, if Yosem is 25 when Uziyahu dies and he becomes king, you have to allow 9 months for the pregnancy, so it means that he was conceived close to 26 years around 26 years before Uziyahu died, and that would bring us back to before the 27th year of his reign. So that would be the machlokes. So, but in any case, there is reason to say, based on these various calculations, that Yosem was conceived when Uziyahu was a Metzora. So Rav Chiya says, so in that case, that would show, like the opinion, that you're allowed to. Amaloi, so Rebbe says, you're right, Afani Kachamauti. I agree with that. That's indeed what I say. So again, we said before Rabbi Yehuda says that, but we said before the Girsa might not be Rabbi Yehuda, but rather Rebbe, who after all his name is Yehuda as well, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Anyway, so therefore, so Rebbe is saying, you're right. There is a solid proof for what I'm saying against Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, who says that you wouldn't be allowed to. So again, as Tosfos says, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda could answer, given that you have a couple of years to play with over there, that maybe Yosim was conceived earlier in the year and Uziyah got Saras later in the year. Whatever the case, the Gemara says, but my commitment, so what's the underlying machlokes between Rebbe or Rebbe Yehuda and Rebbe Yossi Rebbe Yehuda, whether a Mitzvah Mochot is allowed Tashmish HaMitzvah or not? So the machlokes is, Rebbe Yossi Rebbe Yehuda suffer, Gali Rachmona Bimei Sfirai, the Torah tells us he's not allowed to have relations during the 7 days of counting, V'chol Shekein Bimei Chalutai. So how much more so during the days of Chalutai, well, during the days when he's a Mochot, where his tumor is much more severe. On the other hand, Mar Sava, where's Rabbi Yehuda or Rebbe, holds no. My de Gali Gali, where the Torah told us that he's also, then he's also. My de Gali Gali. What the Torah didn't tell us, the Torah never told us that as a Mukhot, he's also B'tash Meshamita. So therefore, you can't derive from that. Now, Tosfos says, what do you mean? I mean, you are allowed to make a Kavah Chomer. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda has a perfectly good Kavah Chomer. Why is Rebbe not accepting it? So Tosfos says, first of all, there might be a way of slugging up that Kavah Chomer. Or another possibility is the whole concept of the tumah of a mitzora is really a chidush. It's a bit unusual among other areas of tumah, including, for example, the idea that just walking into a room is metame thing. Or third possibility is Tosfos says since it's not just the fact that the Torah says that during that time he's also the pasuk after all uses the word like we said before shiva the yashav chotale shivas yamim. So Rebbe can hold that the word Shivas Yomim is a mute. Only those 7 days is he also implying that before that he would have been mutter. Okay. So that would be the machlokas, therefore, whether he's mutter in Tashmish HaMitah during that time of Chaluta, of when he's a Mochot. And again, that's going to affect the question, therefore, is there a downside to the Kohen checking him after he's Mochot during Chol HaMoed? Is there a downside to it? Does he stand to lose anything? If we say that he was Mutter and Tashmish HaMitah before that, and now is going to be also, then there is a potential downside. That would be like Rebbe. On the other hand, if we say like Rebbe Yossi Rebbe Yehuda, that he was also the whole time, then there's no potential downside, then the Kohen should check him during Chol HaMoed. Okay, so the Gemara says, now, before we said, at the top of the Amud, we said it all depends on what the Kohen says. And we said that Reb Meir says the Kohen even has the option to not say anything at all, and therefore the guy's not going to become Tomei Mochot. So the question is, remember, the Kohen Talia Milsa? You're telling me that it all depends on the Kohen? And we said, so Reb Meir says the Kohen has the option to be quiet. Reb Yossi is saying he doesn't have that option. He has to either say Tomei or Tahor. But in other words, they both agree with the premise that until the guy is seen by the Kohen, nothing happens. So is that in fact the case? And the Gemara says, yeah. Indeed, Vahotanya, and indeed we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says, Uviyoim he roisboy, and on the day that there is seen in him, it's talking about over there, when you see in him Bosuchai, healthy-looking flesh in the middle of the Tzaras, then he's Tomei, but the fact that it says Uviyoim implies, Yesh yoim sha'ata roisboy, Yesh yoim sha'ata roisboy. Those words imply that there are days on which you're allowed to look at Tzaras and days that you're not allowed to. Mikan Omru, based on this, the Chacham said, Chosen Shenerled by Nega. If a Chosen develops a spot that might be Taras, Noisnum like Zayin Yimei Mishta, we allow him the entire 7 days of Sheva Brachas. The Kohen does not check him during those 7 days. Loy Ulaveso Luchsosai. That applies to him as well as to his clothing, as well as to his house, as well as to his clothing. If any of those develop symptoms of Tzaraas, we wait until after Sheva Brachas to check him. And the same thing, during a Yom Tov, Noisim LeShiva Simei Rego, we allow him the entire 7 days of the Rego, and we check him only afterwards. Divir Rabbi Yehuda. That's what Rabbi Yehuda said. Rebbe Oimer Enit Tzarich. Rebbe says, you don't need that pasuk. Harei Huaymer, I have a different pasuk that shows, I don't need to learn from Uviyoyim Heroisbay. I have a different pasuk that shows that it all depends on when the Kohen sees him. and that the Kohen can wait until after a mitzvah is completed, such as Sheva Brachas or the Yom Tov. You have by tzaras of houses, the Sibra HaKohen of Finuas HaBayis, the pasuk says the Kohen has to order them to clear out everything from the house, and only then does he come and check the spot on the wall and see if it's tzaras. So Rabbi says, if we see that we allow the person, even for a dvar harashus, we allow him time to clean out his house and get everything out of it so it doesn't become tame, which, by the way, Rashi mentions on the pasuk from Sifra, that the Torah is concerned for his earthenware kelim that they shouldn't be lost, because most other kelim you can tovel on the mikveh, and food, if it becomes tame, big deal, you can eat it when you yourself are tame. Or for that matter, if it's cholin food, then you could eat it anytime. So it's only clay cheretz. You see how much the Torah is concerned for a yid's money, that even clay cheretz, which are worth next to nothing, the Torah doesn't want them to become tamei and have to be destroyed. Anyway, so we see that for dvar harashus, we allow time for the guy to clean out everything in his house before the kohen checks it. So Rebbe says, kol shekin l'dvar mitzvah. How much more so when you have a mitzvah involved of sheva brachos or of yomdev, that the kohen has to wait until the end of that time before he can check it. So the Gemara says, my benayu, what is the practical difference, what's the nafkamina between Rabbi Yehuda's drasha from a yom herois boy and Rebbe's from Tziva HaKoyin? So Amar Abai says there's no actual difference. Mashmos Doshin Ikim Benayu, they're just arguing which pasuk do you darshan it from, but there's no actual nafkamina between them. Tosfos points out, okay, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you would say that Ufinuos Habayis teaches us that you have to clear out everything, even, for example, bundles of straw or wood or whatever. The Rava Amad Dvar HaRashus Ikebenayi. Rava says there is an actual nafkamina between them of a Dvar HaRashus. When you have, so Rabbi Yehuda would be saying only when there's a mitzvah involved. So only when there's Sheva Brachas or only when there's a Sheva Brachas involved or a Yom Tov, which are mitzvahs, then therefore we're going to delay. But for Dvar HaRashus, let's say, for example, the guy has, the guy has an important business deal that he has to finish. And if we tell him he has Saras and he's going to be quarantined, he's going to miss that. So Rabbi Yehuda would say, nothing doing, you can't delay looking at Saras because of that. Because the pasuk is only telling us for a Dvar Mitzvah. Whereas Rebbe would say that you could delay even for a Dvar HaRashus. So for Rabbi Yehuda, what does Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? Why can't he learn, according to that, why can't he learn from the case of Saras of houses that you could delay? He would say, Mehosam Legamrinan, you can't learn anything from there. The Chidushu, because after all, the whole concept of Saras of houses is a Chidush, the fact that it even works that way anyway. After all, regular wood and regular stones are not makabel tuma. Here, when you have that wood and those stones are built into a house, then the house becomes tame. So therefore, there's a chiddush in it, and therefore you can't learn from tzaras and houses to other things. Now, the Ritva says, Rebbe would say, on the contrary, if you see that you can be, that you're machmir so much on tzaras of houses that even wooden stones become tamei, and yet we're seeing that the Torah is makel and allows you to empty out everything from your house before the Kohen comes, then how much more so we should apply to other areas. But Rebbe Yehuda doesn't like that. So the Rebbe, Oma Itzrich, Rebbe says still, even if you learn from Yom HaRois Boy, that's not enough. You also need the Pasuk of Tzivah HaKohen, Ufinuos HaBayis, and tell us that it applies also, that it works, that you need that as well. Rebbe would say you need both of them. The Ikos of Rachmano of Yom HaRois Boy, if the Torah had only written the word of Yom HaRois Boy, have Amina, then we would think, like Rebbe Yehuda says, L'dvar Mitzvah Eim, L'dvar HaRashus Loi. You're allowed to delay for a Dvar Mitzvah, for a Chosin during a Sheva Brachas, or for a Yom Tov, but for an optional thing, for example, a guy has a business trip to go on, then no. Therefore, you have the case by tzaras of houses where we see that you're allowed to delay as well for dvar harashus in order to clean out or in order to get out all your furniture and everything out. The e kosher rachmana b'tziva akoyin. On the other hand, if it only said it by there, the havamina hani ein, then you would say, yeah, you know why you allow him to clear out his house first? The lav tuma de gufe who, because the lav tuma de gufe, because after all, it's not a tumor of his own body. So fine, it's only a tumor of his house. So therefore, we're going to give him a break and allow him to clean it out first. Aval tuma de gufe, but when it comes to tuma on his body, you would say he has to see him right away. Sricha, therefore, Rebbe says that's why you need that pasuk as well. and you can't learn one from the other. So that's why Rebbe says that even for Dvar HaRashus, you're able to delay. Whereas Rebbe Yehuda disagrees for that with that and says only for Dvar Mitzvah. But the point is, everybody agrees that until the Kohen sees him and says Tomei or Toher, then nothing happens, no status changes. Derech Agav, by the way, you know, we know there's the whole thing, you know, in English they usually translate the word saras as leprosy, and you have people who argue that this whole thing, that the guy has to be quarantined and he has to be sent out with chutz l'machne and all that, it's because of the health, it's because you don't want diseases to spread. Or Gemara is one of the proofs against that, because you see Adarabba, the guy is a chosin, he's in the middle of Sheva Brachos, you have a zillion people around him, and Davka then we're saying don't check this for whether what he has is saras, and don't start quarantining him or send him out of the city and so forth. And the same thing during Yom Tov is the time when you have the greatest number of people gathered together, the most opportunity to be spreading it if it was a contagious disease. And Davka then was saying that you wait till after Yom Tov. So it goes to show, of course, as we know, that saras is not just a contagious physical disease. It's a ruchnius. It's a manifestation of a problem that the guy has beruchnius, and therefore there's no problem delaying it until after the Sheva Brachos and after Yom Tov. And who knows? You know, the guy can do tshuva during that time, and the saras will disappear altogether. Okay, we'll continue the sugya tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.